Hello, this is Josh Carr with The Real Angle, and today I'm speaking with Alex Wilson, Chief Operating Officer, COO at Pantera. Alex, how are you doing today?
Hey, doing very well. Thank you, Josh. How about yourself?
Doing well. Thanks for joining me today. So one thing I always like to get out of the way, because if I don't, someone invariably emails me about it. The web address for your company is panteratechnology.com. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Correct.
Good. So, you know, I guess my first question, which is kind of silly, but I'll ask it anyway. So a lot of UK companies, which is what you are, will go with the UK suffix, and some will go with the .com suffix. I guess you went with the .com suffix, decided to get on that bandwagon.
Get on the bandwagon, keep ourselves open. I think we're a global firm in terms of a couple of our co-founders are from New Zealand, actually. So they come over from that end of the world. And then, yeah, we wanted to make sure that we could keep ourselves open and service the kind of global real estate market and not just pigeon ourselves whole into the sort of the .co.uk side of things.
Fair enough. And that's a good place to start. So let's talk about, so with that theme of global sort of on the mind, so to speak, let's talk about what Pantera does. What is Pantera?
Yeah, cool. So I think it's probably worth taking a starting point from how we kind of came about. Myself and a couple of the co-founders that we started Pantera, we all worked in a property management company, more on the operational side before, and had a background there working in the tech side on that. But we were dealing with rent invoicing, collecting rent, maintenance work, service charge, that whole piece, and doing the operational side. And then started to work with a lot of family offices, property managers, and then started to delve into the asset management world. And one of the questions that we were constantly asked was, fantastic, we can look at how our property has performed backwards, and we can see how much rent we collected last quarter or the quarter before, or month by month. But how do we start to predict what might happen going forwards? And how do we start to test the various scenarios that might play out across our property portfolio? And so we took a big step back then and started to analyze what was out there in the market, and realized that the way that people scenario plan, the way that people forecast, or the way that people look at potential acquisitions and transactions for their portfolio is still done in a very traditional manner. I'll call it traditional manner, archaic manner, where it's reserved to either gurus or wizards on Excel who can pull together models and have very in-depth analysis, or it's kind of older platforms that are more geared towards that sort of Excel interface. And so Pantera comes at the challenge of having to create models that can take quite a bit of time from a much more modern technology perspective. And so it focusing on giving you the speed and accuracy to model with a visual format rather than relying on that sort of Excel interface.
Well, which, yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. I mean, you know, from my perspective, for whatever it's worth, you know, it's interesting that you have people walking around with, you know, computers in their pockets, right? They've got cell phones everywhere they go, but all the business technology they've used traditionally has been mounted on the desktop. And it's like, okay, well, you know, what if I want to be able to see my data somewhere else other than my desktop, you know? And I'm not saying you're going to do, look, you can't do serious work in the car, right? But that said, you might want to still have access to the data. So that makes a lot of sense to me. So it's a financial projection tool, to make a long story short, right?
Yeah, it's a financial forecasting and investment modeling platform.
Okay. And most of them, and for the most part, market-wise, you're focused on the UK right now, right?
At the moment, yeah. I think purely just where we're based, that would be the simplest answer for that, and what we know in terms of the market. But we have a couple of customers over in sort of APAC. That's more so because of being based, or the background of the other two co-founders having some connections over there. But we've had some interest from certainly different areas around the world. And I think some of our customers at the moment have portfolios that span different regions, different countries. And so for us, expanding into those different areas is certainly something that we've always got sort of an eye on. But obviously getting a focus now on the UK is kind of where we're starting.
So, and out of curiosity, when you've looked at the sort of the APAC customers, just to talk about them for a moment, I mean, are the differences in the way they look at things actually really mathematically different, or is it just they have a different word for the same concept?
It's a good question, actually, because I think what we found is that the areas, especially kind of New Zealand, Australia, they have very similar ways that they run their investment modeling and the way that they view their investment modeling to the UK market, which is why we've had a bit of early success there. And I think it's when you start to go into different areas around sort of Europe or branch into like America with the different terminology, actually there's quite a big difference in terms of the tax, ways that they manage tax and the ways that they handle different, certainly usual financial elements from that side. But yeah, I think you're right. The way that actually compared to kind of New Zealand, Australia, it's a very similar market to the UK market in that sense.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, for my part, I mean, years ago I was in Dublin. I did some teaching at Dublin Institute of Technology, and that was all fun and, you know, easy enough to get to from the New York market. And, you know, there was a whole discussion, I guess, that they started doing water billing. They were charging for water for the first time. And it was a de minimis charge, whatever it was. But of course, the people are upset because there'd never been a charge for water. And how dare the government charge for water? But again, it was like 100 euros. I mean, it was de minimis, like, you know. But to my American mindset, I'm like, what do you mean you don't charge for water? Like, water isn't free. Like, it's a utility. Like, you're paying for it one way or the other. I mean, maybe it's not this tax, it's that tax. But again, the water pumps don't run themselves. You know, and that for me as an American, at least, to really start thinking actively about, okay, well, how do we pay for things? And is there a logic to any of this? Or is it just simply we do it that way because that's how we did it 100 years ago, and so we're still doing it that way? Now, it's interesting. Whenever anyone talks about tax, I'm always amused when someone says, well, my country's low tax or high tax. And it's like, well, they still get you. Like, they still find a way to they get it out of, well, you may not know you're paying it, but they're still getting you one way or the other.
They'll make it lower but give you multiple different versions of it, so it adds up to the same one anyway.
Right, they'll call it something else. They'll call it something else, and it's on income or sales or property value. It's curious stuff. So mathematically, obviously there'd have to be some flexibility from market to market, but it doesn't sound like it's not technical barriers stopping you from going into these markets as much as it is just, I guess, building relationships in a sales force, basically.
And
that's a question I wanted to ask, actually, from a Salesforce standpoint. So you're a software company, you know, how are you getting clients? I mean, is it the tradition, like, is it through, like, how are you building this base of customers?
I think we've been really fortunate that having spent the sort of six or seven years in the previous prop tech company, had a really good network and a really good foundation of people that we knew in the industry. And so it was pretty straightforward for us to start to approach some of those individuals that we'd worked with before. And actually, some of them were the ones who really prompted us to come up with the idea to start Pantera, because they were looking for something and looking for a better future state than what was out there already. So a lot of it comes from that initial word of mouth. And we've been really fortunate that some of the early customers that we've had on, because we've been around for sort of 24 months now, but actually had a live working product and a live customers for the last 12 months. And so some of those early customers that have come on have been really influential to the growth of the platform and the growth of our business, and absolutely from a word of mouth perspective as well. And I think their own networks and their own connections has been a really good starting place for us, because they've been able to go to the market and say, hey guys, look, this is very different to what you've been used to doing. You're not looking at an Excel interface. You're not looking at a sea of data in rows and columns. Actually, it's a completely kind of modern way to view your modeling and how you interact with the models. And so property folk are very curious, I find. And so it's been very easy to go out and come to the market with something new and actually just have conversations about, hey, look, can you just give us some feedback on what we're doing and see whether it's something that fits into your future plans or how it helped your business? And that's driven a lot of curiosity, and a lot of people have started to come and want to hear more about it through that side.
Well, and what I'm hearing here a lot is the part about, and they're using Excel, right? Because in your market, from what I understand, for the most part, people are just using Excel. Whereas in the US, you know, Argus is a very dominant platform over here, at least for office and retail. So I sort of see it going the other way over here sometimes, where someone says, I know I want to build complex cash flows, but I don't want to be locked into a product, or maybe I don't need that level of crazy. I only need to run like three tenants. I don't need to run 500. So how do I rebuild what Argus does in Excel? Because I only need to do it for three people, you know? So it's interesting. I mean, it's, you know, I hear that you're replacing a lot of what Excel does, but you're still working with Excel one way or the other. I mean, often I imagine you're still dumping your results to Excel so someone can do something in it, right?
100%. Yeah. I think one of the biggest questions we get on a daily basis is, okay, this is great. How do I get this into Excel? And it's kind of like, yeah, you're always going to need that. And I think we'd be naive and pretty dumb to think we were going to just replace the entirety of what Excel does. However, I think there's certainly the ability to take information off Pantera into its Excel raw format. And that allows people to then be able to go and do whatever they need to do outside of it, or
their
share it.
Customization thing. Yeah. And sometimes even with brokerage firms, it's just simply they want to reformat it and make it pretty. You know, they want to put the corporate colors on there and the brand, because, you know, branding. So interesting. So focused on the UK again, coming out of that previous relationship, because competition, it sounds like most of the competition right now is just simply giving people something to move off of from Excel, essentially just bringing them into the modern world more than anything else.
Yeah, I think there's probably a couple of ways to think about it, especially over here in the UK, and maybe touched a little bit on your point with Argus in the States, that it kind of buckets it into two parts, or at least I feel like. There's the Excel sort of plugin or interface systems, and there's some great systems out there, often built by those who are in industry. They work there for 15, 20, 30 years and have built versions of models to be able to make them more efficient for different firms. And I think the likes of a Forbury have done that very well. The likes, we've got a guy over here, Alex Housego from Crete, who does a very similar thing. There's an older legacy system called Kel that was built in kind of 1985, I think. So back some time ago.
It's amazing. By the way, I will just jump in for a moment. The fact that you refer to a legacy system from 85, I think that's something a lot of people don't appreciate, is how many legacy systems are still out there. You know, people using hardware and technologies that are decades old, and you know, our industry is very hidebound. I mean, culturally, you have an attitude of, I use brick because my father used brick and his father before him used brick, you know. And so the fact that you say, well, there's a product from 1985, I think that's shocking to some people, but if you're in the industry, it's not that surprising.
I had one the other day where they've all got Apple MacBooks in their office apart from one Microsoft computer, which is the modeling computer. And they had a break-in in their office block. And the first thing that they did was, on a Monday morning, they came running in going, where's the Microsoft computer?
Right.
So you're right. If you're in the industry, that still exists. And you kind of understand that that still exists. But I think if you're not understanding, or you haven't really experienced that within the industry, it's sometimes quite difficult to think, gosh, people are still operating in this manner, but that's how it is, right?
And that gets me to, not to divert us here, but that gets me to a question or something I wanted to ask, which is, so you're working in the prop tech space, right? Compared to other tech stuff, what do you, I have a couple things I can say or questions I want to ask, but what do you see as the difference between working in prop tech and, say, other kinds of computer software tech things? I mean, what's your take on prop tech space in general?
I think I've got a little bit of experience having worked in a couple of different tech sectors. Actually, I worked in the conference call technology space when I was a bit younger, and then also in the HR tech space, doing global mobility tech for some larger firms, going cross borders and going on secondments, those sorts of things. And I think one of the biggest things I've found with prop tech is, it's definitely been ripe for innovation for quite a long time. It's similar to like the finance sector, right? That was definitely ripe for innovation. And we've seen how much that has changed over the last 5 to 10 years, especially here in the UK. And I think when it comes to different players coming into those markets, they've been able to spread a vast amount of that market very quickly. I think property and prop tech specifically has needed to come in at different speeds and different times, because there are such specific parts within the industry that work in, to our point earlier, quite traditional ways. And so whilst there have been, say, in a modeling specific term, non-property specific platforms have failed to sort of come into that real estate space because of the real estate context that they need to provide analysis on yields, on IRRs, on things that actually matter to the CRE space.
Right.
And so prop tech has been ripe for going that way. And I think now is a really good time for it to really push on and have that innovation happen. But I think it just needs to start to come together a little bit more. Whereas I think in other spaces, there's been a lot more integration between platforms. There's been a lot more working of different businesses coming together, but actually prop tech has been traditionally quite siloed. And I think some of the prop techs are now starting to really try to come together. Some are trying to kind of keep themselves separate, but it's very much taking a little bit longer, I'd say. But I'm keen to hear your
That's mainly the, I mean, that's been my experience too. And it's my experience that it's siloed, not just in terms of technology, but also even funding. I mean, not to get too into the weeds with you, because obviously, you know, there are things that you may or may not want to get into. But, you know, when I talk to people at prop tech firms, often the funding they're getting is not from your traditional VCs who deal in technology. It's often from people in the real estate and property businesses, where it's someone says, well, I see you have a solution for my company. I see you're a software company. I'll invest in that. There's a gentleman I know based in Colorado that has a large real estate private equity firm, and they have as a sideline of their funding, they do software companies, but it's only prop tech software, you know? And it was very much, well, we need an accounting solution. This is an accounting company. Let's invest in this real estate accounting company, you know? Which I think also gets to a matter of timelines, in that, you know, you're working in a business that's slower to switch over. And, you know, I often, when I talk to people in prop tech and you talk to them about the exit strategy, they don't really have one, as much as it's, well, we're going to grow a business, not, and we're going to go public in 2 years and everyone's going to make $1 zillion and buy a boat, you know? you know, it's not the Facebook model, if you will.
Yeah.
No, what were you saying? Sorry.
I was going to say, you're absolutely right. We've got some sort of fund and firms that have cropped up over here that do that prop tech specific space. There's a Love Ventures is an example over here. But then you're absolutely right. You've got that sort of industry side who JLL Spark is one of the ones over this side that do a lot of investing in the prop tech space and that world, and end up doing a lot of funding.
And that's Jones Lang LaSalle. I mean, that's a real estate. That's a real estate company that said, hey, we also want to do something in technology. So, you know, here we are. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And speaking to them, they're almost quite a separate business completely. And they just have such a drive to the prop tech space and trying to help the industry grow, that they feel like it's really important to help businesses and prop techs grow. But it's really interesting when you see some of the actual property businesses who maybe are competitors in a way to Jones Lang LaSalle, that's thinking, okay, well, if they're actually going investing in that prop tech, why should I use that one? Is that maybe just become a Jones Lang prop tech? So there's kind of that balance of an education of, hold on, that doesn't mean that it's a Jones Lang owned prop tech.
It's not their product. They're just they're just a strategic investor, right? They're not running the firm. I've seen that conversation before. I used to be on the board of a prop tech company in the US that, you know, was talking at one point about getting strategic investment from Moody's. That didn't happen, but whatever. But, you know, there was always that conversation of, well, if this large institution gives us a check, you know, we need to be clear that we're not a division of Moody's. We're a prop tech company that happens to have them as a major investor, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's an interesting conversation. So, so you're growing. What is the vision for the firm, just longer term? I mean, because now we're talking about timelines here. So this business, Pantera, has been around how long again? When did you launch officially?
So we launched a live product and first customers came on about 12 months ago.
Okay. So like, what are the plans? Like, where do you want to be in a year, 2 years, 5 years? Like, how do you grow, I guess, from where you are?
Yeah, so I think at the moment we're split in terms of customer base, about 50% investment agents, 50% the sort of landlord fund asset manager side. And so we service both sides of that coin and are going to continue to try and offer that full sort of cradle to grave part of the process, right? Whether it's going from ground up development, appraisals and models there to all the way to full disposal side of things from the assets you've developed, bought, managed and sold, right? So there's that full extent of things that we're continuing to grow. And I think the focus for us has always been, how do we make investment modeling and what is and can be a very complex process in some extents, but at the other side can also be not so complex, which is a single asset building. How can we make that's left to specialists traditionally very simple, easy to do, and still have the extent of the metrics you require out of it and still the sophistication of what modeling is? And so that's a big thing for us, is just to simplify the process and continue to find ways to do that. We're thinking a lot at the moment about connecting different stakeholders in different ways that kind of drives the whole industry forward. So from the investment agent side of things, when they're analyzing deals and sharing those over with their clients, the investors, the funds, the family offices that are looking to acquire deals or look at different deals, how do we connect those so that the investment agents are working in the most efficient manner and presenting their business and they're presenting their opportunities in such a way that puts them in such a high stature and in a good light, but then allows the landlords, the funds, your family offices to take the information they're provided and run their own numbers, which they're always going to do, right? Which is they're always going to have to go and do, but link the two so that they can do it in a really efficient manner and not have any gaps or blockers for that process being really seamless. So there's a big focus for us on continually and like employing people to work seamlessly together in that whole sort of process, I
Well,
think
and that's an excellent point. I mean, we've all, anyone on the investment side has done the dance of you look at the model and you see what it says the tenant is paying, and then you have to go dig out the lease, and then you have to be like, okay, is this tying out? And then you're like, well, it's not. Wait a moment, there's an amendment to the lease, and then you have to go find the amendment, and then you're like, well, I've got the First Amendment and the Third Amendment. Where the heck's the second one? Like you're missing a document somewhere. Like, and there's a lot of that happens, and unfortunately, it's not a pleasant job, but someone has to double check all that stuff because if you're going to buy the building, you want to know what you're actually buying. So, it's no, it's, and that's well put. So it sounds like the focus really is more on product development right now and just making the product better. Not that it's not good, but just building more features and, growing
Yeah,
it as you
I
go.
think it's been one of the things that I suppose has surprised us the most has been that when we've showed people the way that you interact with Pantera, which is this what we call the property map, it's this visual of how you build out a model, right? Some people say to us, oh, hey, 5 years ago, I sketched this on a piece of paper because I wanted to try and understand where the risk was across the kind of the whole period of my asset, where the voids lined up, where there's opportunity to refurb and increase the rent and increase our market rent there. And so for us, it's how do we take what we've been able to do from that visual side and enter that into other parts of the process to really help people work efficiently and work more seamlessly together, which is it was a key thing.
Excellent. And then I guess one other question I had, or a couple other questions I had, which is, the real estate business obviously has had some challenges recently. Interest rates have gone up. The work from home thing has decimated a lot of the office sector. To what extent do things in the real estate industry affect you as a technology service provider? Like, is that, or are you still sort of doing your job, so to speak? You're talking to customers, you're selling units. Like, but if interest rates go up or down, is that something you're even noticing? I mean, how much does that affect you? I'm just curious.
Yes, it's a good question because it would be we see ourselves as fitting right into the real estate cycle, the real estate space. So we are tracking how the market is moving very closely, and I think that's an offset of our customers using our platform and doing their own analysis and doing their own planning and modeling as the interest rates changes and as They need to look at debt across their portfolio and regearing and all those different elements that will have a huge financial impact on how their portfolios perform and the decisions that they make. I think for us, directly impacting the likes of Pantera, I don't think necessarily. I think it's more us being able to help support our customers in a way that gives them more opportunity to run different analysis at,
right,
based on the different cycles.
So they ask, right, different questions based on where they are in the cycle.
That's it. That's exactly, okay, it. Yeah.
Right. And versus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I guess just more generally, when they're making more money, maybe they're more willing to buy a new technology or something. Well, or maybe they're making more money and they don't retrench. I mean, I've also seen it the other way, where someone doesn't really re-examine their business processes until they're in trouble. And then they start to say, well, wait a moment, maybe we need to, you know, think more holistically about this.
Yeah. And I think this certainly this last 12-month period has given people over here in the UK the opportunity to look at exactly how they set themselves up for when the market picks up again and transactions, right, are really flying, right? And I think we were speaking to people the other day who say, oh, look, it usually takes us sometimes 3 weeks to put together our models. When we start to get really busy and analyzing huge amounts of deals again, when there's thousands that come across our desk, I don't want to have to go through that same process that it's going to take me so long to look at all those deals. How can I use something that's going to help with that deal flow, top of funnel analysis, and pair that sort of quick sort of art of, okay, I've a gut feel, I think this is about what our hurdle rates are for our clients, and this is going to be a good deal for us, or in that sense. And then taking it through to the scientific area of actually modeling in detail and going, okay, how can we pair that art with the science and do it as quickly as possible and set ourselves up for that when it does really pick up again. And I think we're certainly behind you guys in terms of when that's probably going to happen. I think we've kind of been following you a little bit.
Yeah, it does seem like the U.S. market, we're coming out of it. I mean, everyone in our market has been saying, well, you know, in 24, that's when we're going to do things again. And obviously, I mean, when we're recording this, we're right at the beginning of 24. So we'll see how true that is. But maybe you guys are a bit behind us on that. I don't know. It's all in waves. It's all in waves. Yeah. So last question, something I always like to ask. Starting business always has its challenges and its surprises. Any big surprises along the way, getting this thing up and running? Good or bad? Things not being as you would have expected, I guess.
Yeah, this is a good one. And we often, I'm front of line. I'm like speaking with a lot of our customer base every day, speaking with, sure, potential new clients every day. So I get to hear quite a lot of this sort of thing. So I guess something that has been quite funny I've experienced in particular, I was speaking to someone not too long ago who kind of, individual branched off and started their own investment firm. Sure. Speaking to them on the phone for a good kind of 15-20 minutes, and their advice was, look, you guys are gonna fail. This is just not something that anyone's ever gonna use. And I was kind of like, sure, okay, this is an interesting,
we hear this sometimes, sure.
I'd love to, yeah, come on, give me more. And I think they're idea was that they're just never going to get people to move away from the traditional ways of working. And I think our whole ethos is that actually it's time for the modern property investor to start to come through, right? And that's right, kind of a big thing for us. And then 4 days later, they came back to me kind of offhand and said, oh, I've actually had a deal come across my desk, which is pretty complex. Do you guys, could we run an example in Pantera?
Could we do this?
Because I don't want to have to do it myself. And I was like, okay, this is quite funny.
Yeah, you just smile. Yeah, there's nothing else you could do at that point. Yeah, no, that's a fair statement for anyone who's ever started a business, which is, you know, when you start a business, there's always going to be a percentage of people who just look at you and say you're foolish, and what are you going to do? I mean, I'm almost hesitant to say this because it's not a story that puts the UK in the best of lights, but I will go there if you don't mind.
Please.
So there's a gentleman by the last name of Diebold. Diebold was the guy who basically invented the ATM. He was the guy who, like, he's the reason we have cash machines. And the guy built an empire and eventually started up the foundation that was dedicated to entrepreneurialism. And a lot of the focus was looking at culturally, why do some cultures have entrepreneurial ventures. Why do some cultures support entrepreneurs and other cultures don't? And so he was looking at the US versus the UK, and he gave the example of there's a comment he made about how an American sees a man get out of a very rich, very nice car and says to himself, what do I have to do to build a business to be able to afford that kind of car? And the British man reaches, and the British man sees the car, and when the guy walks away, reaches into his pocket to get out his keys so he can key the side of the car. And that always made me laugh. Again, sorry, not to beat up on you guys, but you know.
That's exactly it, right? I like to compare how the US take up technology to the how the Brits take up technology, which is very different. And I think a perfect example is this over Christmas. My dad, having recently retired, his bank contacted him to say, hey, look, you've retired. You're not getting the same salary coming into your bank account every single month. We're going to change you onto a different account. Like a pretty normal thing that you'd expect, right? And so my dad's response to this was, I need to go and take out loads of cash from the cash machine because if my car, they're just going to cut me off. And my car's going to stop working and I don't know what's going to happen and they might close me down.
So he's going to put it in boxes, like cardboard boxes under his bed or something and just sleep on his money.
And I'm like, this is like, it doesn't work like that. They're just going to issue a new card. It'll come out. It won't stop working until you get it. And you can access this on your phone. Well, he doesn't even know how to get onto banking app anything. So it's like,
you're
so far behind in understanding this and the adoption of the technology on how to actually understand it. That's definitely, we find that similarity here.
Well, and it is scary how adoption curves are getting shorter and shorter. Like how getting to a million customers used to be impressive. But like I read somewhere that like, you know, when Netflix originally launched as a DVD mailing service where they'd mail them to your house, right? Because that was their original business model. It took them like a decade to get to a million customers. But when ChatGPT came out, it took them it took them literally 5 days to get a million people to be, you know, ChatGPT users. And it's just the adoption curves at this point are insane. A new technology comes out and within a month, everybody's using it. So which gets back to sort of the beginning of this conversation, which is real estate is still one of the great holdouts in terms of we're just slow to adopt technology. You know, we have a very tight ecosystem and it's a process. Well, look, for my two cents, I think what you guys are doing is great, which is why I wanted to have you on. I mean, the U.S. went through this conversion from Excel to using more modern technology decades ago. And I think it's time for the rest of the world to get on board and stop just using Excel for everything. But, you know,
it's great to chat to you. And I think we're certainly seeing over here a lot of people are going out on their own and establishing their own firms and have got an ability to start from fresh in terms of how they approach the modeling side and forecasting and investment analysis world. And also the presentation of it. People want to do things in a way that they present easier information to be read, present their own businesses in a different light. And like you said earlier, put their branding on and make it their own. And that's what we're really trying to enforce over here is to give them the ability to work more efficiently, but actually present and put their business out there as best as possible in the same light too, which is always good.
Good. Well, look, thanks again for joining me. And for everyone listening, that was, Alex Wilson at Pantera, Chief Operating Officer, and their web address, Pantera Technology. Thanks again, Alex. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Josh.